This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 645, brought to you by Eero. Never think about Wi-Fi again. Get free overnight shipping in the U.S. or Canada with the code iFanboy at checkout. And iFanboy listeners just like you. Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 645. I'm Ryan Haupt, and I'm here with Josh. You can have that Mexican dessert twice, Flanagan.
That's a new one. I will give you that.
All right. We are iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, and one of us picks their favorite book, and we call that book the Pick of the Week. We talk about that book, other books from the week, the patron pick, and maybe if we have some time, read some listener mail, and it is going to be fun. You will have fun. This is your spoiler warning. This is a review show, and there's going to be spoilers, so just use common sense. This week, Josh had the pick, and he didn't tell me what the pick was going to be before sending me the script, so this is the first time seeing it.
The pick of the week is Batman number 52, and there's a good reason that you didn't know it before then. And it's because I didn't either. I will say this was one of those weeks where I read a lot of good books. I was like, oh, I enjoyed all these, but I did have a hard time picking out a pick. And I had to really think about it. And it was flip-flopping between this and Mr. Miracle. And I was like, I don't even really want to talk about Tom King's work again. I'm getting a little tired of it, which is going to make that first letter we have tonight a lot of fun. I don't know why I called this tonight. It's morning. But at the end of the day, when I sort of looked at my books and what was making me sort of the most thoughtful while also enjoying it, I went with Batman number 52. Also because multiple times during the issue, I was like, why isn't Lee Weeks a superstar?
Right.
I had that thought multiple times. There's one shot in here where it's Batman jumping, you know, he's not in the rain, but it kind of looks like he's in the rain. He's jumping between buildings and he's got a rope and he's pulling it. It's very, very Mazzucchelli-like. Mm-hmm. But it looks nothing like any of the Batman that we've seen, you know, in the main books here for quite a while. You know,
this doesn't look like anything like Scott Collins' Batman.
No, it certainly doesn't look like Greg Capullo's Batman. And I loved it. I was like, that's just so good. Like, it's almost that panel, I can remember the moment that put me over. Like, I was like, wow, that's a really good looking Batman. And so, you know, all of those things sort of mixed together. And the fact that the whole time, basically, this is the second part of the, I don't know, it's called Cold Days, but I'm going to call it the 12 Angry Men storyline.
Where Bruce Wayne, Batman.
Yeah. Where Bruce Wayne has been put on a jury, which, again, if this hasn't been done before, that's brilliant. I mean, still brilliant, but like, I thought, wow, nobody thought of that? That's amazing. And if you're Tom King and you're sitting around and you're like, what am I going to do? And you know, then you get a jury summons one day, you're like, what if Batman was on a jury? Oh my God, write that down. You know, like it's so straight up obvious and interesting. And then the twist on it is that he's basically going after himself. He's going after Batman's work. He's not defending what Batman's doing. He's using that as a reason to not acquit. I mean, to not convict, to acquit. And I kind of am spending a lot of the time wondering, you know, I know what the big motivations are, but I'm thinking really like, what is Bruce Wayne actually thinking here? What was Mr. Freeze thinking here? What, you know, what is behind all this? And that's the thing to me that I found the most interesting. That was the thing that sort of grabbed me the most. Because he's basically trying to convince the jury. By the way, Bruce Wayne's right. There is a reasonable doubt. They're not beyond a reasonable doubt, and they can't convict based on that. And the one time I was on a jury, I had the exact same thing go on.
Were you with the lone holdout?
I wasn't the lone holdout, but we ended up as a hung jury, and basically it was a mistrial. But it was a prostitution case, and I was like, there's not enough proof here that's beyond a reasonable doubt. And I think one or two other people were along the same thing. And so I wouldn't vote to convict. And the other people were like, it's a hooker, come on. And I was like, no, we're not, like, according to the rules that foreman or the judge gave us, we're not there. And I was really surprised that people just didn't give a shit. And that's kind of what's happening in this scene from, you know, in this whole jury room.
Sure. And I mean, that's a lot of 12 Angry Men too, is just getting the 11 Angry Men to even care what they're mm-hmm. there for. I've never been on a jury, so all I have are movies and comics.
Yeah.
I don't think they'd let me be on a jury. But that's neither here nor there. You're right when you last talked about this book about the salmon-colored shirt. That's an issue.
It still is.
And everything else about this book is great, though.
We're going to give you the salmon, which matches also the color on Mr. Freeze's, like, glasses and little voice thing. Chesty.
Do you like, where does Mr. Freeze rank on your bat villains?
I don't really care one way or another. I think
like Mr. Freeze quite a bit.
I think the best work with him was done in the animated series. When they kept him in that gray area, he wasn't really a bad guy. I don't know. If you make him into like a supervillain, I find him very uninteresting. He's like, if you just make him a supervillain, you don't have that Hearts of Ice kind of thing, Heart of Ice thing, then he's like a good, fun supervillain to hang out with for a little while. But if you put the heavy heart thing all together at the same time, that can get kind of tiring because they've done it so much. So I'm kind of, I kind of feel like I've, like, it is good and it's interesting, but I've also, like, we've covered it.
I sort of don't wish this was coming out of the wedding.
Yep.
Just because I think Bruce is an angry enough person that you could tell this story without it having to be he's working through something.
I agree with you and I don't agree with you, because in the realistic world that they are producing comics in, it is a serial and they have to connect one thing from one thing to another. And I feel like this is actually a fairly subtle way to do that. So they're doing their job and what they're supposed to, but you can also just kind of take it out of that.
Yeah, I think in my head I do.
I think he's walking a line here, and I think it's fairly deft. But I know what you're saying, and in a perfect world, the story that stands on its own, you don't really need that. And it's funny because I noticed they're being very subtle about it in here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know. They're just sort of saying, well, with what happened. I think Alfred says that once, you know, or something, you know, similarly vague. So they're not hammering it into us, I guess, is where I'm going with that.
And I do like, I always like stories of the citizens of Gotham.
Mm-hmm.
Those are always interesting. It's always fun to get the on the ground perspective of what it's like to actually live in that city, because it's easy to forget that in these fantastical superhero worlds, people have to have, you know, that's the beauty of something like Astro City.
Yeah.
You get the day to day life and you don't often get that. And so, like, I love the stories about, you know, cops telling them to keep the guns. It's Gotham, you know, all that kind of stuff is good.
I also like that as a level setting for sort of where Gotham is at now, because everybody writes it a little differently. So Gotham was a really big part of Scott Snyder's run and sort of the character of Gotham.
Right.
As he was going back and forth in time. And with Tom King's Gotham, I don't know that we've had a real good sense of that yet. you know, if you think of year one, like Batman, like you got a real sense of what Gotham was like at this point. So this gives you a little bit of idea where Gotham is at the time this story is taking place, which is relevant and interesting.
Yeah.
Who is that Mohawk guy? I never noticed him before.
I don't know. He's just one of, you know, Gotham's street toughs who somehow got on a jury.
Yeah.
He's probably wearing a vest. He's probably wearing his fancy court vest under that jacket.
He has them. That's sure. That's for sure. Even he knew not to wear salmon. At the end of the day, it was just like this was a really good comic book, and it got me thinking a lot while I read it, and that's something that I really enjoy. And this is sort of the two heights of comic book fun are, you know, you're not thinking about it at all. You're just like, wow, what's happening next? This is great. Go. And then the other one is, wow, what's going on here? But in that good way, not the bad way. So, you know, those are the two things I tend to look for in things that I like about a comic book. And again, Lee Weeks, you know, it's great. Every one of these pages has something really interesting to look at. There's a bit where, digitally it's on page 19, where there's a woman on the jury and he's trying to, it's when they start talking about the confession. It's a lady with the scarf,
mm-hmm.
and she's being sarcastic, where she's like, I know what you're going to say about the confession, that he was so scared of Batman. And the second panel has a, like, the first panel is her rolling her eyes. The second panel is a mock fear, like face. We're like, oh, I'm so scared of what Batman did to him. And then the third panel is she's sort of pointing and you know, talking at Bruce Wayne, you know, and then the fourth panel is a smug arms folded, like, see, I'm right. And it's a short amount of time, but there's a ton of stuff that went there, a ton of acting that was really, really good. And I knew exactly,
right.
I knew exactly what she was doing with her face. And I was like, that is wonderful, wonderful cartooning right there.
In those four panels, you learn that she is the person who calls the cops on a barbecue.
Yes, totally. Also, she has tiny baby Trump hands.
She does. Her potato salad is under seasoned. You know that about her.
That part of it's funny, that part of the drawing is actually not good. Her hands are too small. Her hands would not be smaller because they are closer to us, unless her face is gigantic.
I mean, maybe that was an intentional choice.
I think, yeah, it might be. I also think that, like, the hand is germane to the emotion that he's trying to get across. So I think there's a bit of a choice that you make there. You say, well, I know it's not exactly perfect, but it sells it. And that's actually what the important thing is sometimes. Where are you with the current Captain America?
I don't, much like I don't like that Batman is recovering from a failed marriage, it frustrates me that Captain America is recovering from this weird Hydra storyline. Mm-hmm. But I am enjoying this rebooted Ta-Nehisi Coates run.
I think that if you're going to have a guy like Ta-Nehisi Coates do this in the current cultural climate, it is about as adept a way as possible of having him be able to sort of address things in a way that is not so directed on the nose that it's annoying.
Mm-hmm.
And it's you know, it's the question is like, well, what is America? What is, you know, what are, you know, what are we? What do we want to be? What were we?
And I don't know that I guess Nuke was always supposed to be the dark reflection of Captain America, but I think the connection as it's made here is done adeptly enough that it's just a really good way of showing the different philosophies mm-hmm. of the two characters.
What I like too, there's some really neat, Nuke is, he's not on the right side of things, but he's on the right side of things.
Yeah, I mean, he and Cap have a Venn diagram.
Yeah.
There is some overlap.
Well, you know, they were fighting against Hydra. They feel bad that, you know, they don't like that Hydra did that. Same thing with Thunderbolt Ross, who, mm-hmm. you know, is in the terms of this story and historically a right-wing asshole and has been way overbearing. But he also fought against Hydra and has been a soldier. And I like that in that contrast, who is right and who is good is murky.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's pretty good.
I mean, do you like Cap stories where he's kind of on the outs with the powers that be?
Kind of.
Yeah, I kind of do too.
I like the idea of it. I like the concept of it. I don't know that I always like the experience of it. Like, it's an obvious, like, it's a really good way of telling a story like that. And Ta-Nehisi Coates is, like, he's the right person to do that. I was going to try to distill who and what he is into a small, pithy sentence, and I couldn't do it. But I think he exists in that framework where, like, he's fully and completely aware, more than most and more eloquently than most, of the flaws in our system for all sorts of reasons. But at the same time, he lives within the system. He benefits from the system there. He sees that it's not, he can say it's evil, but not evil at the same time. And that's a interesting line of thought, you know, and to then take it and put it in cartoon form with Captain America, you know, I like knowing that there's thoughtfulness behind what's going on, even if I'm not always sure what it is.
Yeah, that's a good way to put that.
You know, and then hoping at the end you have some kind of resolution. I don't think it'll be an answer. We're not going to solve the American crisis at the end of this story, but at least we're going to think through it with a person who is really, really good at thinking through it and illustrating that.
I don't remember why they made Sharon older. But it is fascinating to watch comic book artists try to draw an old woman, because old men don't seem to be a problem, but old women, every artist seems to have a completely different take.
I thought Yu's version was pretty good.
I thought so too. Well, I think Lionel Francis Yu is a fantastic. He's one of my favorite artists.
I used to like him a lot more than I think I have more recently.
Is that, you think it's style change, inking change?
I think that he's been on things that he shouldn't have been on.
Okay.
I'm thinking specifically of around the time of Secret Avengers or Secret, one of them, the one with Bendis. I wasn't really into him at that point. I think he's doing a really good job on this, and part of it is that there's a bit of a sparseness here. Mm-hmm. There's a coldness, a bit of a loneliness that's going on that I think that he's actually depicting pretty well, and also that's in the colors. I'm seeing also. Yeah, I think the Sharon Carter, she was, that had to do with Rick Remender's storyline.
Oh, right, okay.
When they went to Dimension Z. And they came back, and they were both old, and then Cap got de-aged by the Cosmic Cube Girl, but she didn't. He turned it down a little, like he de-aged her less, I think, to make this bot believable.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's clearly like a beautiful woman, but she's, you know, older. She's got lines around her face. She's got, you know, you can see it in her neck and in her face, and but not so much that you're like, why would you be with this? Why would it would be difficult for Captain America to be with like my 90-year-old grandmother?
More to talk about.
A 55-year-old former super athlete model. Okay, you get that. Like, that works. Yeah, I like it. I don't know that it's enjoyable.
It is. I mean, are you saying it's not enjoyable because of the light it's shining on the world?
Yeah, all that. I mean, it's been kind of a bummer the whole time. It's not like I've had a good chance to feel good about Captain America, because Captain America's not feeling good about himself here.
Yeah, that's a good point.
But
it looks like the cover to the next issue has Cap in a hoodie.
Well, that's always good.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that means he's going off the grid.
Mm-hmm. I do like that. I like that more. I don't know that I like him, like, yelling in the face of government officials.
Mm-hmm.
But operating under cover of night or whatever it is, you know, off the grid, that I can get with that. I like it in the movies.
And there's a scene where he's boxing against like a hologram. And for some reason, I love the fact that Captain America still trains.
Yeah.
After all this time, like, dude, you can skip leg day. But no, he won't. He will not skip leg day.
Well, if you were to continue the metaphor, you have to always keep working at it. You can't become complacent no matter how successful you are.
That's true.
And that's your American symbol right there. Like, don't, you know, even if you've achieved it, if you've got to keep working all the time. And he knows that. And that's, you know, he's the best of us. And that's why. Blah, blah, blah. And he can't skip leg day, because otherwise it's so sore when you come back. By the way.
He knows that.
Presumably. Presumably. So I guess my second choice would have been Mr. Miracle. The recently Eisner winning Tom King, Mitch Gerrits joint. I don't think I said this before when we were talking about Tom King, so I'll take a different approach on him. And we're going to talk about this later, too. I think in one of the emails. Doesn't matter. I have a really interesting and fun time trying to suss out the personal in this. And I don't think it's always completely literal. I don't think that everything I'm reading, oh, this totally would have happened in his life. But I think that the emotions and the underlying intent of a lot of this is coming from experiences that both Tom and Mitch have had raising kids and, you know, being in families and things like that. And even if, so even if like the thing you're seeing isn't like, he's not telling you exactly what he was feeling or what it was. It's rooted in a lot of truth. And I can see it from a mile away being, you know, a parent of two small kids and in this world. And I love that. Like the authenticity of that shines through to me so very much. Interesting thing that came up over the week, former writer for the website, Jeff Reed, had said that he read The Vision and liked it, like see the craft, enjoy it, and everything was kind of a bummer and it wasn't his thing. And he was like, he couldn't decide if he wanted to read Mr. Miracle or not. And I thought about it, and my first answer was, no, don't read it. You won't like it. And that's fine. Then I thought about it further, and I said that the difference between The Vision and this Mr. Miracle story is that The Vision was all based on artificial love and an attempt at building a life that was not real. This book is based on the fact that the love is completely real and completely endless. There's a bit at the end, you know, where Barda and Scott Free have a fight, you know, and they're arguing about something very significant and important, but later there's a point where they're both sort of lying there and he's like, I love you. And she's like, I love you too. And it is so sweet and romantic and real and earnest, that those things can coexist together. And it doesn't have to, unlike over in Batman where everybody's fuming and has to keep their anger about whatever's going on, like this underneath it all is a rock solid relationship, a bedrock. And that's the difference between this and Vision. And so, that might be enough to say, like, oh, that the other one was kind of depressing. At the root of this one, it's not depressing. It's you have that love and you're trying to work through very tough decisions, almost in spite of it. And that makes me like it.
I am loving every issue of this book because of the mixed feelings and the complexity and the real relationship. I also, I won't say which one, so listeners can guess. I own one of those t-shirts that he wears in the issue. He goes through a lot of t-shirts. I won't say which one, but I got one of them.
He does. I would think that he wouldn't want to wear superhero t-shirts because, you know, he's a superhero.
But maybe you get them for free. Maybe it's like if you're in the Watchtower at the Justice League, you just grab a stack on your way out, and that way you don't have to worry. You know, so it's that genius thing where you don't want to think about your wardrobe.
I kind of don't mind that he wears the superhero shirts, but the Sheriff of Babylon shirt, I was kind of like, all right, guys.
And I love Mother Box has iPhone.
Uh huh.
That's just a very natural. I mean, because that tool back in the 60s, you know, was unimaginably complex, but now it looks like a thing we actually use all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that the war has screwed up boom tubes. So now they're not instant. And it's basically like boober.
Yeah, there
boober.
Was that. I really like the scene with Funky Flashman, oddly enough.
Yeah, the only thing with the Funky Flashman scene is it does one of those weird, like, Fritz's out panels. And I assume there's going to be an explanation there, and the explanation kind of scares me. Because if the explanation there falls flat, I worry that this whole series is going to be less than for me. And I don't think it will. I think we'll stick the landing. But when I see those panels, I get a little nervous.
I don't even notice them anymore. And that might be like, it's like people who read Watchmen without reading the pirate section.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe if the baby's not real.
Maybe. Well, we know Darkseid is. Because Darkseid is.
Well, I mean, the big moral question of this is, does Scott... It seems like it's Scott's decision because he's the All-Father, I guess, now. But also, Barda is involved. Hi, Father. Does he give the baby to Darkseid to end the war, you know? Needs of the many, needs of the few. He talks to the guy at the party store about it, who gives him a pretty clear answer, but Barda's not having it, which is correct. And it seems like he's like, well, he's just fighting his, like, I think I know the right thing to do as, you know, as a god, but as a person, I can't do that. So he's at odds. He can't, he's at a rock and hard place. And it's interesting. I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know. And I like that. I like that. I again, same thing with Batman. Like, I'm thinking about this, you know, every panel, every sentence seems to have weight, seems to mean something. It's good.
Very good.
Inhumans be getting killed, yo.
This might have been my pick of the week.
I could see that. Death of the Inhumans number 2. Donny Cates and Ariel Olivetti.
I felt like there was just a lot to like here. I think, I don't know if Donny Cates is doing this on purpose, but I think since Warren Ellis's run on Karnak, he's just being written as grumpy Warren Ellis, and I'm okay with that.
I wasn't sure if I was okay with it. I think I would like him to look like old Karnak again. Mm-hmm.
But do you agree with me that he's being written as kind of grumpy Warren Ellis?
Kind of. He's not quite as eloquent, but that's because it has to be.
And I liked the scene with him negotiating with the Kree. I definitely saw the twist coming about. They're like, I didn't come here to surrender. I came here to talk about your surrender. It was obvious, but good. And I like the idea of Vox as a villain, you know, Vox obviously being the Latin for voice. And so that's the obvious antithesis of the Silent King, right, is the one with the voice.
Right.
I think that's like that's one of those ideas. Again, you know, Batman on the jury. How has someone not thought of that before? So good on Donny Cates for thinking of that. And then the idea of, you know, Black Bolt retaliating against the slaughter of his people by just going to the Kree homeworld and naming the dead and that being enough to defeat the other army. I thought that was just a really powerful moment. And then it ends on a pretty startling cliffhanger. And so I'm, you know, excited to see where this goes.
If I had to walk away from what you said there at all, it would be that I'm dubious about Vox. I don't like that he's a bit of a clone of Black Bolt, like an anti-Black Bolt. Like it makes sense from a comic book superhero standpoint, but he has the thing on his, you know, that symbol on his face that's like the fork but upside down. He's got the same sort of lines on his suit. He's got the little wings. And really what gets me is that he refers to himself in the first person plural. So he's we, us. And I think that he's going to be a Venom. Because what's going on over in Donny Cates' Venom book is that you're learning that Venom is a bigger cosmic power than we ever suspected and blah, blah, blah. And I don't want that.
I can see that.
I don't know that that's what's going to happen, but he looks like Venom, too.
He does. You're not. And there's, well, Donny Cates has also introduced a new, like, the natural predator of the symbiotes in Venom. Mm-hmm. And there is some similarities in aesthetics in addition to calling himself we. So, yeah, I think I didn't see that or think of that, but I think you might be onto something there. And that would definitely change the feeling of this book.
And you know, if I'm Donny Cates, I would do that. I would weave all my shit together and be like, look, I was making all one big thing. I would totally do that. But I don't necessarily want that because part of the thing about the Inhumans that I think got off track was that they got, you know, the cloud, then everybody was an Inhuman, and whatever the political reasoning was behind not having mutants anywhere in books instead of having Inhumans, like all that stuff wrecked what was the nature of the Inhumans that was interesting, and this felt like it was getting back to it. So,
yeah, you need your Inhumans to truly be other to work, and when you put them too much in the Marvel Universe, I think you lose some of that otherness. Mm-hmm.
It wasn't even that it's bad that they were calling everybody an Inhuman instead of a mutant. I don't really care about that. It's that it erased the Inhumans as whatever they were, and they just became the new mutants, basically. So that's not as great. But, you know, that being said, like, this is a good Inhuman story, you know, in the context that it feels like it should be. They're in space. They're off doing big things. They're avenging wrongs and being angry.
Yeah. I struggle a little bit with sign language in comic books.
Uh-huh.
That's probably just because it's a language I don't speak. And it's a motion-based thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just hard to show in panels, I think.
But. Yeah, I think he got around. I feel like Did they? I feel like they've done that before. I always felt like Black Bolt communicated mainly through Medusa in the past, and it would just be like, he would nod at her, or he would look at her, and then she would intuitively know because their love was deep and their communication was... And I liked that, just as a mystical element. Now the fact that he's, you know, doing ASL, you know, not as interesting.
Might be ISL.
What, I know, but either way, it was...
Inhumans.
What I was...
I was making a joke.
No, I ASL.
I made up a thing.
Adelan... Come on.
Oh, Attilan. Okay. Yep. You brought it back.
Thank you. I guess we have a new sponsor. I'm excited about this. The sponsor this week is Eero. Eero is a Wi-Fi system, and the idea is that it's such a good Wi-Fi system that you will never again have to think about Wi-Fi again. It was started to build a Wi-Fi that the creators wished that they had in their own homes. Fast, reliable connection in every room, even as far as the backyard. And so the idea is that there's the Eero home Wi-Fi system. They introduced it in February 2016, and now they've introduced the second generation system. It's smarter, faster, more reliable. Basically, the way that works is there's a sort of a home base station, the Eero, which is your Wi-Fi router, and then there are beacons, which you can put in different places in your house to extend it and have sort of it's a mesh Wi-Fi system. But the deal is that the system also learns. And it improves upon itself, and you can place the beacons in different places and sort of get the best placement. You can have as many beacons as you want. You could, there's a set that sells one and then one with two, and you can add more if your house is larger. You want to do it that way. And the difference being that your signal is strong everywhere. The other thing is, I was thinking about this as I was setting it up. My old Wi-Fi router, it's fine. It's pretty good. It's getting to be a few years old. But when I bought it, I was like, I need to have a good one. I want to make sure that it's future proof as much as possible, and I want it to be fast. And it is fine. But I started looking at it in the context of the Eero, which stylistically, you know, it falls more in the Apple TV sort of camp. It's, you know, it's a very simple white, nice shaped box, basically. And then I looked at my old Wi-Fi router with like three big antennas sticking out of it. And I was like, oh, those never advance. Those are like old PCs. They just sort of sit there, the Eero has an app. It makes setup pretty easy. They have really great customer support. You can call, you can chat, you can do whatever. Supposedly you're going to have somebody on the phone within 30 seconds. If you call, you'll have a person. I didn't need to do that because the app worked so well that it wasn't really necessary for me. So I guess if I have a problem, I will get to that. The second generation Eero now has a third 5 gigahertz radio. I'm not entirely sure what that means, but I know it's good. I know that when I have my old router set on 5 gigahertz, it's much faster than 2, which is the other setting. And so having more radios would be good. It's tri-band. It's twice as fast as the last one. So you can do more simultaneously. Like when we record this show, sometimes I have to be like, don't watch Netflix now. But I don't have to worry about that anymore. And again, you're placing the beacons in different places of the house. So all throughout your house, you should have fast, reliable Wi-Fi. There's increased speed. It sits flat on a surface, or the beacon plugs right into the wall. What was actually kind of cool is that... in my hallway upstairs, I had to remove a nightlight that I have there for the kids if they need to get up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom. And I thought, that's going to be a problem. But the beacon also functions as a nightlight. It has an LED light at the bottom of it. You can set it to be always on. You can set it to be on a timer, or you can set it to be ambient. So if the light goes dark, if the room goes dark, the light comes on. And I was like, that solved my problem. I don't even need this nightlight anymore. And I was very happy about that. I've had it up and running for about a week now. It is absolutely faster. I've run tests. I kept my other network up so I could sort of switch between them and check. I've done speed tests. It is about three times as fast as my 2 gigahertz band on my old Wi-Fi, and about 30-40% faster than my 5 gig band here in the house. So it's been really good. I haven't had any dropping problems, and I've increased the area where I have a good signal throughout the house. And I haven't had to play with the beacons too much and rearrange them to go to different spots, but I like that you can, and you can use the app to sort of, basically optimize everything as well as you can. So... you want to get over to Eero.com, and with this show, we are offering free overnight shipping within the U.S. or Canada with the code IFANBOY at checkout. You put that in after you've gone through the process, and it'll take the shipping away and send it to you overnight. And I want to thank Eero for sponsoring the show.
Paper Girls.
Paper Girls.
It's a comic book. You know what those are. And this one is written by Brian K. Vaughan, or BKV. First of the iFanboy video show interviews, if I remember correct. And this is drawn by Cliff Chang, who is a delight. And are you reading this, Josh?
I'm not. I dropped off at some point, and I've had a hard time getting back on.
I absolutely understand. I think this does read better in trades, but just because it hadn't been talked about for a while, and I recently did a reread of all the issues up to now to go on the Understanding Comics podcast to talk about this. And it's a really cool, clever little time travel book where, as far as I can tell, and it remains to be seen when the book ends, he hasn't said when the book is going to end, but it's probably going to be issue 30. And there's sort of a A-line story of these four paper girls moving linearly through their own timeline, but jumping around in time as they do it, all centered around this suburb of Cleveland. But then there's a B story of a war between generations that's being told in reverse. So in the early issues of the book, as far as I can tell, we're seeing the end game of that war, and you're starting to see what caused it as we get further into the series.
Wow.
And it's incredibly clever, deft storytelling that someone like BKV is capable of. And it's fascinating to watch it unfurl in real time. So that's why I'm on issues. But I agree, it will take one or two rereads in trade form to really, I think, pin down exactly what's going on.
Yeah, I think I lost. What happened was a couple of times I let the issues pile up.
Mm-hmm.
And then I lost the thread. I think I still had a hard time figuring out what it is that I wanted to grab onto, maybe in terms of characterization or otherwise.
Yeah.
It was really beautiful looking, and clearly, like, it's great. I just was passing me by. But
well, so the first arc, I think, is actually a little bit of a mislead because it focuses on the new paper girl who's in town, and the way the story is structured is it actually shifts the point of view from character to character with each arc, but I don't think that's not made super explicit. And so if you don't catch that kind of curve where the main character doesn't stay the main character, I think it's easier to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still good. I think it'll read really well when it's all put together.
I'm sure. And I will check that out.
And I like time travel stories, so I'm in for that.
Speaking of stuff that I kind of missed and then was too far behind on to bother.
Oh, that's right. I feel like if it's Jeff Lemire doing his take on a superhero universe, you're all over that. But I forget that you're not really a Black Hammer person. So the Quantum Age, which is from the world of Black Hammer, written by Jeff Lemire, artist Wilfredo Torres, colorist Dave Stewart, and letters Nate Picos. And this is essentially Jeff Lemire doing Legion of Superheroes.
And you like that?
In the far future. I'm not a diehard Legion of Superheroes uh-huh. fan, but I read like Mark Waid's run that he did with Barry Kitson in the early 2000s, I want to say, and enjoyed that enough that I feel like I have a grasp on these characters. And so some of these characters are descended. Some of the characters in this book are descended from characters we see in Black Hammer, the Martian character. And then the rest are kind of their adult versions of the Legion of Superheroes have kind of split up. And now one of the members of that team has become an authoritarian ruler of Earth. And the rest of the team has to reform to try to take him down. And there's a flying psychic armadillo that can go out in space. And I'm there for that.
That all sounds good. It's fun. What do I know Wilfredo Torres from?
Didn't he do Jupiter's something?
Jupiter's, one of the Jupiters. One of the Mark Miller Jupiters, Legacy Circle, whatever. I think he did the flashbacky ones.
I mean, this is like Jeff Lemire doing Astro City. This is, to me, a fascinating exercise of sort of rhyming couplets of the superheroes we know with Jeff Lemire's take on them.
Mm-hmm. I've read an issue here or there. I think it was a patron pick or something like that. It was fine. It all of a sudden I looked and there was a lot of it. And I was like, I'm not, I can't.
That's the other thing that impresses me about it is the output.
Yeah.
Is kind of staggeringly impressive.
Well, he's got mouths to feed.
Yeah, it shows. The product is there. It's putting it on the page.
So you brought up Xerxes, the fall of the House of Darius and the rise of Alexander, which I have a hard time saying. Number five. I am curious what you thought of this, what you've been thinking of this.
It's kind of, I don't know, it's not a return to form, per se, but it, yeah.
There were returnings.
It's the best thing I've read from Frank Miller since I can remember.
Yes,
like,
that's
not
true.
Not since I can remember ever, but you know, in his recent production of stories, I think this is the closest to, you know, showing off his true mastery of the form that we've seen in a while.
I agree with that. And you know what else I like about it is that there's no sense of him trying to impress anybody or do anything other than what he wants to do. And it is on the right side of self-indulgence.
Mm.
And what I mean by that is he's decided to do the whole thing basically in double page spreads. And then there's bits at the end, which are just like pages and pages of soldiers coming at you through the page.
Mm-hmm.
And there are circumstances, I think, where I would not be okay with that. But in this circumstance, I'm like, just Frank, do what you want. Be Frank here. Be fully distilled Frank. Do what makes you happy. And I'm gonna follow you along for it.
Yep. I couldn't even necessarily tell you what the story is.
Yeah.
I don't care.
It covered a lot of ground in this issue. Like, I think it takes big leaps in time that
right.
we're not fully aware of what's happening. And so, you know, if you kind of know the basic history behind it, you can sort of stick a flag in the ground and hold on.
I'll tell you what I could have used.
Yeah?
It's a map.
Well, it's a small area.
I mean, a map. I like a map. It doesn't matter how small the area is. I enjoy a map. And I think you do, too. So I don't know why you're pushing back on this.
Because I can go look at a map.
All right.
You should go. People should go listen to, I think it was a Persians. I think that was the basic thing. A hardcore history podcast did a bunch of episodes on the Persian conquest, and this is all in there. Gives it a lot of context that I think helps me read it. And I don't know if those are still free or not, but it's like literally like probably each show is like 5 hours. And there's probably five of them, but
that's it. It's an intimidating undertaking to listen to one. I can't imagine actually producing one.
I know. I think about that too. Cosmic Ghost Rider number 2. That's a fun book.
Sure is.
I don't know if that's really Frank Castle anymore, but I don't really care. Like, it's like this post give a shit Frank Castle. So he's not as grim as he used to be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's still grim. Don't get me wrong. You know, he's hanging out with baby Thanos, who's formidable as a baby. Yeah, it's big and crazy. And I really, really dig the art from Dylan Burnett a lot.
Yes.
I think that really sells it.
Agreed. He does good space sharks. Was it Jason Aaron's Thor run that introduced space sharks as part of the Marvel cosmic ecosystem?
I believe so. Yes.
I'm here. I'm for it. Like, you might think that I would have a problem with it, but I do not. I think space sharks are a delight, and I enjoy almost every time they show up.
Where do they get the armor?
I don't care.
What's the other? There's the great white one, and then there's the other one.
I'm guessing that's one of those deep sea sharks.
Yeah. There's a name. Like, I can't think of it. I was hoping.
Frilled shark?
Something like that, yeah. And they're big and look weird.
Mm-hmm. There's a shark called the goblin shark that can kind of shoot its own jaws out of its mouth to snatch stuff.
Yeah.
It's pretty gross, but pretty cool.
Yeah, somebody made them little helmets.
I love it. I'm going to guess Odin when he was drunk. I'm going to guess drunk Odin did that.
You know what I also like? Those are good sharks. Like, the drawings are, mm-hmm. they look like sharks.
Yep.
Sometimes people draw sharks. Certainly sometimes people draw dinosaurs. And you think, have you looked at a picture of this at all? but these look like sharks to me. They have that dead look in their eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eyes.
Better than the Meg.
Oh, man, I saw that trailer and I was like, oh, I want to see that.
Yeah, I was hanging out with a shark researcher friend of mine last week, and we were discussing the Meg, because she had only just seen Jaws like the day before for the first time, and she's a shark researcher.
Okay, that's weird. Yeah.
Well, she was invited to do a panel discussion, but she had to like sit and watch the movie first because it was a post, you know, after the movie panel discussion about actual shark stuff, and that was her first time seeing Jaws, and she liked it. So to her credit.
Okay, good.
Yeah. Also, this was good. A good watcher, and not the stupid Unseen.
That's true. That's very true. Didn't the Unseen show up somewhere else?
I don't
care. Did he show up in something? I blocked it out.
And then the last page is, you know, I like alternate universe takes on heroes. So Cable in this world is the leader of the Guardians of the Galaxy with a Captain America Kamala Khan and a extra punky Jubilation Lee. And then Howard the Juggernaut.
Jugger Duck. And then who's Rocket supposed to be? Is that Rocket?
Yeah, I think it is Quantum? Rocket. It looks like he's wearing some sort of quantum armor, but the cover to the next book looks like he's got like a brood parasite body on him.
Well, all right then.
So what remains to be seen.
Is that a Rob Liefeld cover?
It certainly looks stylistically like it could be, except I can see one of Kamala Khan's. Nope, that it is cut off at her ankle, so you can't see her foot.
That's either Rob Liefeld did that cover, which I could see him doing.
It is Cable.
Yeah, that's a Rob Liefeld Cable face right there.
And shoulders.
All of it. Wow. Look at that. I think that's what's happening here. I wanted to quickly touch on Leviathan number one. You and Connor got the ability to talk about Farmhand number one from Rob Guillory. And shortly thereafter, his chew partner, John Layman, released Leviathan. This time working with co-creator Nick Patara. It's a kaiju story. It's pretty straight up. The whole time I was thinking, well, Nick Patara is the right person for this. 100% to draw a giant lizard radioactive. It's Godzilla. I mean, it is. Who's sort of red, drunk, going through the city and destroying everything. And then there's also sort of a weird black magic element to it. I just like that everybody keeps getting killed.
I do like the sort of Rashomon, the same event from different perspectives. Uh-huh. Rashomon being a movie I've never seen, but I just know that that's what it is. And so I do like the idea of a giant disaster or horror being unleashed in the world, and you have people who just are surviving on the ground versus like a guy who takes a religious perspective versus a guy who's an, you know, mm-hmm. you have the mainstream religious guy, but then you have like the apocalyptic religious guy. And I like when those worldviews are all interpreting the same event differently.
Mm-hmm. I will say like my thought, I was like, okay, I think I see what you're doing here. And I might be wrong, but I think it said 1 of 5. I did think a little like, is there a need for this in our world? But then I saw the way that Nick Patara drew it, and I was like, I don't care if there's a need for it. I would also want Nick Patara to draw this if I was John Layman. I would just like, you're, go nuts, have fun. I think it's kind of just a bit of silliness, and I'm okay with that. That's what I decided on. I had fun with it, and I feel like it's only a few issues. I thought the Trump bit, I don't want to see it anywhere, even parodied. Like, I don't need to think about that at all. But I know Layman has very strong feelings on those issues, but it was fun. I liked it. Let us move along to the patron pick. Seeds number one. This is from Dark Horse Comics, and it is from Karen Berger's new line. Karen Berger, for those of you who don't know the history, the legendary editor and founder of the Vertigo Comics line, to me, the most influential comics ever made in my lifetime. And some of the best stuff ever. She certainly has an eye for talent. And this story is by Ann Nesenti, and the triumphant return, I guess that remains to be seen if it's triumphant, of David Aja on art, color, letters, design, the whole schmear. Did you read it?
I did.
Yeah?
Yep.
So, I will begin. At first, I wasn't sure if I was enjoying it. And okay. Cause it is fairly, Innocenti is a name I've known for a long time. I feel like she was writing Daredevil when I first started reading comic books. And I remember those being kind of vague, but I was like 12, so I didn't really know the difference. But as I was reading through this, I liked a lot of what I saw, but I think that the way that this was working is that at first it was a very specific light that is shining on one part of a scene and you only see that part, and then it would go over here and you'd see another little part of it, and underneath it might be really good and interesting, but we haven't been shown all of it yet.
So the story is still obviously early on in the telling, but There's some sort of very decrepit city. It has a kind of a Brian Wood DMZ feel.
Yeah, I was thinking, at first I thought, is this about East and West Berlin? Is that what's happening here?
Yeah, and there's a big wall, and people apparently can go over the wall, but there's, you know, differences in the way technology works, and no fly zones and things like that. And then there's this whole thing with bees and seeds.
Bees.
We're going to need a lot of money, Michael. Mm-hmm. Bees aren't cheap. So
bees?
Go buy us some coffee. There's a reporter character, there's a sex worker character, and then there's a very mysterious character whose identity is sort of revealed at the end, maybe, by the reporter seeing them with the sex worker. And I guess I'll just go ahead and say it. It's a gray alien type.
Yeah.
And so, as far as I can tell, the gray aliens are collecting seeds of a dying Earth and
seeds.
Bees.
Sorry, I'll stop.
You can't have bees in here, Josh.
They don't allow you to have seeds in here.
And the aliens, I guess, are going to use the bees to keep Earth's plant ecosystem going as the humans have let it fail. That's my assumption.
Aliens seem to be convinced that, like, they're basically just like worker bees. They're workers who are like, boss says the humans are doomed, so we got to do this stuff. Like, they're very dispassionate about it.
Yeah, so it's sort of like Mac. Yeah, so you've got like the micro level, the bees are doing their micro invert task, and then you've got the vertebrate masters of the bees who are still doing the same thing, just at a bigger scale. And I don't know, it's cool, it's eerie.
Yeah,
is that a good word? Eerie.
Yes, it is.
There's a lot of weird, vague, creepy imagery, and I personally, I was one of those kids who read all the UFO books and alien stuff, and I to this day I think the gray alien mythology is one of the creepiest modern mythologies that exists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so very rarely done well. And so if this is going to do something cool with that mythology, I'm probably going to stick around.
Yeah. I think I liked, it's funny because Anna Senti, like I said, like I would have known her from the late 80s. And then she didn't do a lot of mainstream comics in the time that I've been reading them. But every once in a while, someone will pop up. And I was reading this thinking, this is really sophisticated for someone who I think of as a 1980s superhero comic book writer. And clearly, like, she's done other stuff since then. I could probably look it up or people would know. I think I've read one or two stories where she also impressed me. But it's not. They're not going to tell you everything. Like, you're going to live in this world for a little while and work it out whether you want to be there for a very, very long time. But you got David Aja, so that makes it a lot easier to hang out there. Now, his style here is beautiful, and it's clearly him, and it, you know, it's as if somebody turned up the contrast really high on a bunch of photos and kept them sort of really stylistic and beautiful. But it's just his drawings, and I don't know what to make of it yet. That's kind of where I am. Like, I'm absolutely willing to stick around with it. I like that there's different voices and the different characters and the different scenes have a different feel to them. I think when we switch to the gray aliens, like, talking about their stuff, like, it's a very different tone that is going on in some of the other stuff. I guess one thing that's going on here is something I'm always wary about is too many issues. You have environmental destruction, you have this divided society, you have technological interference, you have the end of the earth coming, you have sexual politics, you have a disabled prostitute, there's a lot here, and it's going to be tough to give all that enough coverage.
But we were talking about being able to draw dinosaurs well, and these magpies are spot on.
Well, there you go. Actually, I heard people, you know, like the way that, like, his faces, they look like photos. They don't look like drawings of photos. They look like, they do look like, not tracings is what I mean. Like, his line is so good that it looks
like
people.
They look like, whenever I use Adobe Illustrator's image trace tool, they look like what I wish I got.
Yeah. And, like, the girl who walks around naked, like, he draws people that look real.
Yep, like it has an actual human body.
Yeah, and I just find it fascinating. I can't not look at it.
He's very good.
He's really very good, and in such a simple way.
Mm-hmm.
It's the best. It's the opposite of the Nick Patara stuff I was just talking about. So, ratings.
Ratings.
Want to go ahead with a rating?
I will give this a 4.25.
Okay.
I really did like a lot about this. I thought it was a good number one issue.
Sticking with it?
Yes.
I'm going to give it a 4, but that's higher than it was when I started.
It's book one of 4, so this is a limited run.
I'm giving it a 4, and I am going to stick with it. I'm reading all 4. I'm in for the duration. No problem.
Nice. Well, if you want to make sure Josh makes it to the end of that duration, you can do that by supporting the show at patreon.com/ifanboy. And the next stretch goal for that particular platform is a non-comics media podcast, which Almost Famous, is that the one that's threatened?
It's been bandied.
So that's what you'll get if you go and support iFanboy at a level on Patreon. And there's also a t-shirt store at ifanboy.threadless.com where there are 7 designs. The classic iFanboy logo. I still have my intern shirt, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's Herm, which is not in reference to anything. Pick of the Week podcast, which is a reference to this podcast. Ratings, which is not a reference to anything.
Ratings.
If one is Electro, you will have to explain. GDAT, you might also have to explain. But you don't have to explain Nothing Makes Sense and because Nothing Matters, because that is the explanation.
Mm-hmm. GDAT's easier to explain.
Than If One is Electro?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I could see that.
And it's a much quicker process.
I mean, GDAT's practically a goat.
Yeah.
That's somebody
else's thing.
You can also support iFanboy directly via PayPal at ifanboy.com/support. And through Amazon, if you're tired of Amazon taking all your money and not giving anything back to the little guy, you can go to ifanboy.com/Amazon where there are links to buy all the books from the Booksplode and just a general link to Amazon. And you can use that as your portal to Amazon. And that way, a little bit of the money you spend there, instead of going to Jeff Bezos, will come to iFanboy.
I'm 5'10". I'm not the little guy. I don't... although in contrast. Anyway, next up, of course, part of the patron fun is that if you are at the $5 or higher level a month, you are in line. It's not an insignificant queue. I'm gonna be honest with you. To get a patron power, as dubbed on you by whoever is hosting the show that week. First up is Hal K, who could have been a session drummer in the '60s. Hal K, Hal K can fly, but every time
well,
he does.
Useful.
He gets a cold for a week.
Ooh. Ooh.
Yeah.
Does he can it stack? Do it. Like, okay, here's my question. So let's say I fly to work and back. That's 2 flights, mm-hmm. right? Do I have a cold for 2 weeks, or does the 7-day clock reset every time I fly again?
It comes on the day after.
Okay.
You fly. So in that case, it would only be extended by the amount of hours between the 2 flights.
Okay. And then can I fly with the cold?
No.
No. So it's a weak refractory period.
Yeah. You gotta pick your battle here.
Okay. All right.
And it's not a horrendous cold. It's not like you're laid low, but you got a cold. Like you can feel it. You're not at your best. Just wipes your immune system right out to fly.
Wow. That's tough.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I would want to use flying all the time.
Well, that's the thing. No one said this was going to be easy.
So I'm hopped up on cold meds flying around.
I mean.
Trying not to get shot down.
You know, at a certain point, you're like, I think I just got to land for a while.
Fair enough. Eric Williamson has the amazing ability to stack sandwiches perfectly so that they are never messy. Things never squeege out while eating.
Wow.
Yeah. Always a clean sandwich when Eric Williamson's around.
But not dry.
No, perfectly moist.
Yep.
And he could even put a sauce on it or have something with a lot, you know, like something with a lot of gooey cheese, like a cheesesteak. But it's still, when he eats it, when he holds it in his hand, or if he makes it himself.
Uh-huh.
It will, and somebody, so he can make a sandwich and give to somebody else, or any sandwich he takes that's been pre-made, as long as he's the one eating it, it'll never be messy.
Dad, can we have sloppy joes? No.
Absolutely.
No, you can't.
You can. You can if Eric Williamson's making them.
It's just a Joe. He's never made a sloppy joe in his life.
There's some magical radius of protection that it just won't go outside the bun.
Wow. It's almost like you'd want to be able to turn it off, though, for certain things. You want that joy of the sloppy joe.
Well, I think one of the questions that arises is, does this affect things like hot dogs and burritos? I don't even know the answer to that because The what is a sandwich question?
I don't think a burrito is a sandwich.
No, it's a wrap.
It's a burrito.
Yeah. It's a tiny donkey.
Now, here's the thing, though. If you say the word burrito to me, I go, ooh. But if you say the word wrap to me, I go, yeah.
I know, right?
So they're in different worlds.
Okay.
We have to move on. We can't. We can't. It's too much. Paul Ruggiero always knows the best postage rate and method. How should I send this? Oh, you're going to want to send that UPS today. Because it's shipping from Massachusetts, but it's only going to Rhode Island, so that's going to be overnight no matter what. And he's going to know that has the best rate at all times. You ever sell anything on the internet?
No. Just myself. Well, sort of as a Patreon, too.
Well, occasionally you will be selling something on the internet, either on the eBay or I will use Reverb for musical gear and things like that, and you don't know what to choose for shipping. There's ways to estimate it, but really at the end of the day, I've been hosed. Like, I sold a guitar once and it cost me $1 billion to ship and screwed everything up. Paul doesn't have that problem. He'll know exactly what the shipping is. Makes his eBay listings perfect.
Through any carrier, it sounds
like. Yeah, and he knows whatever systems are available internationally. Huge.
So he could do he's got a DHL account ready to go.
Yes, all of it.
Because that's a hassle. I have tried to set up a DHL account for some international shipping, and that was a pain.
Yeah, no, Paul's got all that stuff worked out.
Oh, that would be very useful.
Yeah, no, it's totally useful.
Well, Roger Priest, he may not have that worked out, but what he can do is he can identify any rock by taste.
The question being, is it like Tony Chu, where it still tastes like rocks, it's bad, he doesn't really like putting it in his mouth, but he can still do the work?
Ah, Josh, but this is where, my friend, you may not know that this is something geologists actually do all the time.
Okay.
First-year geology students are often think we're trying to trick them when we say, no, just put it in your mouth, and you'll know what it is. And they think we're lying. And in some cases, it's not true for all rocks, but in some cases, your mouth is the best tool for determining what that rock is. Now,
so is this a superpower? Or do we all already have this?
No, because it doesn't work for any rock, but unless you're Roger Priest. So if it's a fossil or if it's got, halite versus gypsum, you can tell really easily because halite's salt. So if it tastes salty, sure. Fossils have a different texture on your tongue. Sandstone versus claystone versus mudstone all have different textures between your teeth. But so those are, so there's not a ton of examples where your mouth is actually a useful tool, but for Roger Priest, anything. He can tell you the difference between a granite and a granodiorite with his eyes closed. He's got it. He's just got to get a little lick. Well, that's serpentinite.
Shale.
He could do it.
Yeah.
Any rock. He'd be great in a mine or on an oil field. Very useful. Very practical power.
How are his teeth stronger than normal?
He doesn't have to bite down.
Okay.
To get the identification. There's only some rocks that it helps to get them between your teeth, but for him, it's literally once he tastes it, he knows.
If there are any young listeners out there who are just talked out of a career in geology or talked into.
Talked in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Come join us.
Let us know. Again, you can sign up for your power and get on the list at patreon.com/ifanboy. Thank you to everybody who did that. Let's do one of these. We're running short on time. Why don't you read this? Because my voice is horrible right now.
Josh from Westchester, New York. I can't do a Westchester accent. Maybe you can, Josh.
I know. I can't think of what that would be.
I've been ruminating on this question for about 6 months. I know it's not that long, but with 3 kids under 5 and a job, it's all I could muster at the moment. After taking your recommendations, I was impressed by the craft that Tom King displayed with The Sheriff of Babylon and the Vision series. Since then, I have been loving his run of Batman since the War of Jokes and Riddles, and have hungrily lapped up every issue of Mr. Miracle. And quite honestly, they're just so good. In my humble opinion, what he's doing is exciting and entirely different than anything else I'm seeing out there right now. As a comic reader, I feel like I more regularly ascribe importance in hindsight. I loved Scalped, but didn't really realize what it was until I had all the trades and read through them from number one to number done. The same goes for Preacher. But I feel like what I'm seeing with Tom King is me recognizing something special as it's happening. My question is, can you think of any examples where, as something was coming out, you pointed to it and said, this is wholly unlike anything I'm used to? Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns came out when I was 3, so I'm a little young for that paradigm shift. But the only other example I can think of is when I started reading Bendis' dialogue in Powers and Ultimate Spider-Man, and it was totally different than anything I'd read before, and that's how I feel about Tom King right now.
I really like thinking about comics and media in general in terms of these paradigms. And I really do think that sometimes when something comes out, it changes everything it changes the direction of things that come after it. You can look back and, you know, in film comedy, you can look back and say when Animal House came out, it changed everything that came after it. In terms of like film comedies, again, like Old School to me is another one of those paradigm shifts. And then there was another one to shift away from that. You know, it goes on like that forever. In comics, I think you can recognize it. There is different ways to do it. There's you can recognize stylistic changes that happen like that, and that people start to imitate. Obviously, this happens in music too. The Beatles, 1964, shows up on Ed Sullivan, changes everything that comes after it. Nirvana, Smells Like Teen Spirit, like those are those moments. And comics do the same thing. Is Tom King one of those paradigms? No. I don't think so. Only because his approach to me seems very personal. And so what you're seeing when he does that is he's putting himself in one way into stories, or it certainly feels like he is in it one way or another. Which is very different than, say, how Grant Morrison would approach something, which was to, think of the biggest, craziest thing, you know, that could pop out of his head. But I feel like there's certain creators and that what they do is so personal that other people might try to copy it, but they won't. It won't be a thing. Bendis sort of straddles both of those sides of the line.
He does. I was going to point out that, like, Ultimate Spider-Man is a personal book somehow.
Yeah.
It shouldn't work, but it does.
I think what happens is that Bendis does a book that, you know, is only he's the only one who can write like that, but other people try it, but it doesn't ever come out sounding like him.
Yeah.
So it doesn't work. And I think that might be a thing. People are going to be influenced by Tom King for sure, but I think that what you're going to get out of that influence isn't going to sound like Tom King. Garth Ennis, same way. No one can write like Garth Ennis, but Warren Ellis, you know, saw what Garth Ennis was doing and went and did a thing that then becomes Warren Ellis. But I mean, I think you could see he's influenced by Garth Ennis. I think the timeline is right for that. And again, Warren Ellis, a lot of people have tried to copy Warren Ellis, but nobody has.
What about his first example with Scalped and what the work Jason Aaron has produced?
I think those are just good.
Okay.
I don't think Scalped changed anything other than Jason Aaron's career, which then went on to change, you know, the Marvel Universe to a certain extent because of his influence on it. But it didn't change how people were doing books. In 1986, Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen, that changed how comic books were perceived and made.
Here's the thought. Okay, so that Dark Knight Returns and Watchmen, 86, and then it was about 15, 20 years before we started seeing The Authority and Ultimate Spider-Man and books like that, which you talked about in the Planetary episode, that really did change the landscape again.
Yeah, I was going to point out The Authority is one of those ones that as I was reading and I was like, everything's different now.
Yep, I felt the same way when I first read The Authority. And so based on that timeline, we might be due. Like, Josh might be right to be thinking about this question right now because it's been it's been 15, 20-ish years since the last big shift. And so something might be coming and we might be in it right now and just not seeing it. Forest for the Trees, But it is a really interesting question. And there's a game Julie and I have been playing where there's this idea that maybe we should do the Oscars 5 years after the years of the movies we're talking about. Because the Oscars usually get stuff wrong.
Yes.
And they usually don't hit... They might hit a few zeitgeisty movies, but they often miss what movies have staying power in our cultural conversation about the world. For example, Shakespeare in Love beat Saving Private Ryan. Like, up and down the board. Saving Private Ryan won a few Oscars, obviously. But, like, Shakespeare in Love whooped it that same year, and that's absurd.
Well, I mean, the answer is that Miramax's marketing department, you know, was amazing. Their goal was to get Oscars, and they went after those as much as possible, and that's how that happened for those years.
But sorry. I guess that... I mean, that's I don't have that perspective, and I'm sure you're 100% correct, but it's just interesting to think about how if you try to declare a winner of that sort of paradigm shift too soon, you can end up just looking foolish.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, you know, the Eisners flirt with that, which is odd that Tom and Mitch won this year, because it was almost like, wow, they recognized it as it was happening, which is, I think, sort of what the letter's talking about, Josh. Two more thoughts on it from me, I think, is that the last paradigm shift that I would remember that I saw as it was happening, and we saw it ripple out after The Authority, after the Miller-Ellis era in the beginning of the 2000s, was Matt Fraction and David Aja on Hawkeye. When that started, I didn't know that it was necessarily going to affect everything, but I said, this is a completely different book. This is like nothing I've ever seen. And then we started seeing imitators and stylistic influences popping up almost right away.
Yep. Even in Deadpool this week, written by Scotty Young, there's, you know, a scene where Deadpool loses his pants and he's got a little Deadpool symbol over his crotch, which is a direct pull from Hawkeye.
Yeah. And eventually... people aren't going to remember what that comes from. It's just going to be a style that people recognize, in the same way that, you know, the Watchmen, people are aping the Watchmen all the time, but they don't know they're doing it anymore. Or, you know, readers don't necessarily recognize
it. Right. Have you read that Doomsday Clock book? It feels a lot like the Watchmen.
It is. I couldn't put my finger on it, but that's what it is. the only other point I would make is from a media standpoint, the difference between now and then is that there I don't want to say long tail theory, but media is so spread out in a different way. Everybody, there's a lot of different smaller audiences now than there ever were, and so to see a paradigm shift is much less likely now. You will see smaller movements, I guess.
This is harder to bring the entire culture with you.
Yeah, because nobody has to. Everybody can pick out exactly what they want. It, you know, as far as a microcosm goes, Marvel and DC Comics and Image, to a certain extent, and some of the other smaller ones around there, they're all a community that are seeing what each other are doing and moving that way. But things will not be as sort of all-encompassing as they had been in the past, I don't think. But I think part of that, too, is you see it in the publisher's offerings, is that sometimes there seems to be, there's like DC, I think, made an effort to make everything like one line, to have sort of a continuity of style, and it didn't work. And then after that, they sort of scrambled to be like, what does work? And then you see, you know, some different experiments and things like that. And it's a much more varied and diverse marketplace than it ever was. And I don't think that's going to change. There you go. Anything else to add to that?
No, I think you said it.
All right. Thank you very much. Thank you for writing in, Josh. That is a really good question. I could talk about that for another hour easily. You can write into contact@ifanboy. You can send us a letter. You can send us a voicemail audio file there if you would like to. Past July, Connor and I, we just mentioned it, but we talked about Planetary Book 1, which is sort of the first half of the Planetary series on our Booksplode series in August, which is now. There will be a Talksplode, and I'll be getting to work on that anytime now to figure out which creator interview I'm going to bring you this month, but there will be something. Are you on the animation? You're on the animation
I'm
tip.
Still in the animation brain trust. And so coming soon from us, as you may have noticed, Connor wasn't here this week. It's not that he's just been quiet. He actually wasn't here. And that is why we have yet to record our Death of Superman show, but it is coming. As soon as Connor is back on the grid, we will get it on the schedule and get it to all you fine folks.
He's on a vacation. It's not even a joke. He's on a real vacation.
I'm not familiar with this concept.
Yeah, me neither. You can head over to iFanboy. You can find out all about our podcast, see everything that we have uploaded there in the past, and listen to all of the shows. Somebody the other day was like, what was that show you did about making comics? And I was like, it's called Make Comics, and there are 50 episodes of it up there with my co-host Andy Schmidt, former Marvel and IDW editor. Those are all up there, for example. There's about 70-odd interviews, not counting the Don't Miss podcast, which are short-form interviews, and you can find interviews with God, almost anybody who's doing anything today, we talk to at some point or another. So make sure to get over there. You can follow us individually at J.A. Flanagan on Twitter and Instagram, although I actually don't have a Twitter account at the moment. I'll probably turn it back on at some point. Or at C.S. Kilpatrick on Instagram. You can find out what the pick of the week is by following iFanboy on Facebook.com/iFanboy or at iFanboy on Twitter. And Ryan, you are at our Haupt.
Just Haupt.
That's right. Sorry.
I got on Twitter early. And Instagram, I'm Ryan Haupt. I didn't get on Instagram quickly enough. Sorry. But if you dig the show, you can write a review or leave a star rating on iTunes, which is a really important way for people to find out about the show. iTunes is kind of the ecosystem du jour for podcasts still. And better yet, tell your friends, make them listen, take their phone, open the podcast app, and just subscribe to iFanboy and Science Sort of for them. Just do it. You can do that on your mom's phone, too, and you can introduce your mom to podcasts and say hello to her from us, because we need you to help us spread the iFanboy love.
Hello, Iris. Doris. Judy.
Ruth.
Zendaya.
Don't forget Ruth.
Of course, Ruth. Who could forget Ruth?
Esther.
All of our cultural influences are names from the 40s. Of white ladies who bake things. So, thank you so much for that. That was fun. I have a cold this week, so I'm off, and I'm sorry about that. It's very clearly, I'm trying to do a good job, and once I get going, I'm okay. When I stop, I have to ramp up again, and that is a weird show. If you've never listened before, Ryan's not even normally on the show. Didn't even mention that. But it's fine, because he's just as good at it. It's fun. Bye.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.